Good evening, you guys. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. This is done for quite a few number of years. We're starting another issue of TechNet, which is a gathering of curious people who want to know more about radio equipment in general, science quite often, astronomy, cosmology. Those kind of subjects get discussed on the TechNet. TechNet is broken up into roughly three sections. First section, people sign in because they do have a question or a comment for the net. And we take them in order. You need that sign in just because you're listening after 36, almost 37 years. 1982 is when the TechNet began. And we've come to the conclusion that it's going to be around a while. It's one of the longest lasting nets that I know of. Under one single leadership, and the one common guy that's been there all the while. A couple of my helpers have come and gone. Let me drop. So in the first section, for roughly an hour, we discuss people's questions and comments. The second part of the TechNet is where Dr. Roy, AC2GS, discusses science talk and the mailbag. So people who don't yet have their license, can't get on the air and talk to us directly, they send a message to Roy, and he in turn brings it onto the net, as well as some nice science puzzles he brings us from time to time. So the third section of the net is where Paul WS2N discusses what the space agencies around the world are doing, particularly National Aeronautics and Space Administration, as well as the equivalent in Europe, Japan, China, and so on. And so there's been some launches, and Paul will be telling us about those and some future launches that are about to happen. Whether anybody's going to send anything to the moon or Mars, Paul will bring that to our attention. Let me drop. So in the first section where you're going to sign in, because you do have a question or a comment, a typical sign-in would sound like this. AC2GS, Roy, and yes. You're going to give me your call letters, your name, because I'm so darn forgetful, followed by the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment. As I said earlier, you need that sign-in just because you're listening. After 37 years, which it will be in September, we believe somebody is listening. It doesn't have to be proven anymore. So I'm going to take check-ins at this time. Please give me your call letters, your name, and the word yes. K2IW TechNet, we're listening.
WB2GXM, Rich, for the comment.
W-H-Y-Y, Joe, yes.
Oh, we picked up GXM Rich. Wes, who didn't give us his call letters, but I made his name, but I know it by now. And Joe, R-Y-Y. Anyone else to check in who has a question or comment, give me your call letters and name right now. Okay, we'll start off with Rich first. That B2GXM. Go right ahead, Rich. I think you said you got a comment.
K2RW in the group, WB2GXM. Dick, sounds like you got a whole new rig. What did you do to your signal? It sounds perfect. What's up?
I think it's really NY2H. Lou, who's been making improvements in the repeater. Let me check on my power output here. I'm twisting the wrong knob. No, I'm twisting the right knob. Like you said, I'm not hearing any crackles, any hiss, whatever. Looks like, there's the right knob. There's low power, there's high power. There's a little bit of different hiss, but you got the machine, let me check. I'm now checking how well I'm coming out of Eastern input, in Selden. And the audio is a little bit lively in Selden. A little bit different sounding, but it's there. So, I've done nothing. And, what's new with you, Richie? Any new pets, any new hardware, any new antennas? WB2GXM, K2IW, you got Richie.
And then to Rio. Well, Dick, same stuff, different weekend, but After a few weeks of substandard audio, I had to comment on that because it sounds great. I'm out of here. K2RIW, WB2GXM.
When you said the audio was substandard, describe that. Hiss in the background, cracklies, is that what you mean? Or the audio just not rounded enough? If I turn off the speech processor, that's what I sound like. There's the speech processor turned on a Kenwood TS-700, I think it is. So when the speech wasn't quite up to standards, what did you hear that was less than ideal, Rich? Go ahead.
In the past couple of weeks, besides crackling and scratching, your audio sounded a bit tinny, on the high end, heavy, and not very much low end. WB2GXM.
Okay. In my earphones, it sounds the same. But maybe I didn't know. Okay, the next one is Wes in 2XJN. Wes has been keeping track of a large number of patents that have been filed by people who want to do what I'm going to call the, I'm trying to name it, I can't think of the name of the guy who wanted to do the experiment. He set up a laboratory out in Shoreham. Somebody tell me that guy's name.
Tesla,
right, the Tesla experiment. Tesla was positive he could send power wirelessly, without using wires, by using the waveguide. It's got a name, the waveguide mode, between the ionosphere and the Earth, by sending a power out there. He thought if he built a big enough tower. So there's a whole series of patents of somebody who wants to use that phenomenon. And the chances of it being successful to send power from point A to point B without losing a whole lot of it, I think the chances of that success are very slim. But those patents, when you read them, they're very well written by somebody who has a lot of knowledge on the subject of radio principles, electronic principles. That doesn't mean the overall concept, though, is viable, and it will be a money maker. Wes has been keeping track of these, and he's quite interested in them. Even though I think it's a really dark horse, the chances of it running an experiment which allows you to send power from point A to point B without wires, I know that Roy and I are very skeptical about that. Wes is going to give us a couple of words on this, maybe. N2XJN, K2RIW, good, Wes.
Dick, check me in at the end. N2EO.
I got N2EO, Rich, and also Marshmallow, Rich's cat. I've got both. Go ahead, Wes.
I do thank you very much, Dick, for the chance of talking to you and to the audience. I have sent to you and to Dr. Roy the paper that was made by a number of scientists in two different universities. One of them was Ulsan, the National Institute of Science and Technology in the Republic of Korea, and the other one was University of Buffalo. And they have made theoretical and practical analysis of that what is being called Zenek wave, and that what Dr. Roy said is doubtful, and you also. I do respect Dr. Roy's opinion. I do thank you very much that he is skeptical. That's very good. Let me drop. And that is because if I have somebody opposing me, I learn more in this area. So the paper shows on the pictures as well two tests. One was power transmission to multiple receivers where transmitter was shielded, and the other one was in open condition. To simulate the earth, they used a piece of foil on the table, about 8 to 10 meters long, and they proved that Zenek wave exists in the interface between metal and air, which would be then air and earth in the regular test. Let me drop. And the power was enough to light up 20 watts light bulbs, although they say that overall load was 40 watts. Dr. Roy found that it is two-thirds of the power that is being transferred and one-third of the power is lost. And I say that because there was no top capacitor on the top of the Tesla Tower, even though that everything was done according to what's supposed to be. The group of scientists didn't deny existence of surface wave and ability to transfer electrical energy, energy through the earth, as treated as the interface, that means surface of the earth and the air. And they show exactly on the pictures that were sent to you the equiphase sinking of the vertically polarized wave that reached the Brewster angle and eventually reached the interface. N2XGS.
Assuming that the ionosphere was something that was very reliable, it's a plasma layer, something like, I've forgotten the number now, 35 kilometers, something like that, above the Earth, or is it 700 kilometers, some number of kilometers above the Earth. If it could be used to send a wave that bounces back and forth between ionosphere and Earth, and that would resonate at something like 600 hertz, I think is the number I calculated. If I could set up a transmitter in New York City, and I wanted to send power to London by that means, and assuming that you could get the power to London with a high percentage of it getting there, and therefore other people along the way could set up towers to sample your power and get it free of charge. If it did work, how would you stop freeloaders from tapping into the system, somehow keeping their presence unknown, and therefore getting free power if it did work? How would you stop that from happening, Wes? N2XJN, K2RIW.
One of the patents of Dr. James Corum, who is one of the owners of Visiv Technology and Texton, the company that is built in Texas, the Tesla Tower, a huge, humongous Tesla Tower, and they want to the end of this year send the energy from United States of America to another continent. Let me drop. The story was that in 2013 they filed the first patent application, and they repeated Seneca Lake in upstate New York experiment from 1934 that was standing that previous 1934 findings were wrong, and they were able to see that the energy sent over the interface between the top of the water and the air in 92% to 98% of efficiency. Let me drop. Soon after that, Chevron, the oil company, was involved in that, and they've got plenty of money. In 2016, they started to build a Tesla Tower, and they filed an enormous amount of patents. In 2017, they filed patents and patent applications every 2 weeks. Right now, they have 100 patent applications and patents, and usually around 3 weeks periods of time, they have new patents. So, one of the patents states that multiphase structure called polyphase at a certain angle difference between the phases is the technique to do not allow for the foreign receiver that is not within the system to receive electrical energy. So in other words, the interface between air and earth is carrying on zenith waves or surface waves anyway, is the same. And from the other side of the planet, as long as you are within Schumann, the resonance frequency or its harmonics, you have a high efficiency, higher than anywhere it could do. Update of the information. Oh, the interesting fact is that if there is no load, it's only potential energy. So this wave doesn't radiate. It radiates only in near field, as you see from the paper. And then it's only in the interface. So then the receiver is updated by the signal every 3 to 5 seconds, and wherever it is in the earth, and the code is changing. So if there is no match between the receiver and the transmitter, based on the chip that is in the receiver, you're not able to tune into that energy and to exchange.
Sounds a little bit like a phased array, and you choose where the output portions are going to be. If this really was successful, who would be using it? Who would be financing it? How would it be charged? And it sounds to me like it's being used to really transmit energy, not just do signaling, if I understand you correctly. So if it does become successful, who's financing it? How does he get rich quick? Who's the source of energy? Who's going to be the load of that energy? And what's that person going to do with it? Is it capable, like you said, sending energy from one continent to another, to a selected site? And why, for instance, would the United States want to send energy to Europe, so to speak? Into XJN, K2RIW.
Well, with that, we have a total revolution. No more tankers, no more refineries. The company that is in Arab Emirates or in Russia, they have to burn their own fuel, change it to electricity, and based on the patent from Corum Brothers, which is Visiv, they can send that electricity to them or through them, through their network, to any place that is a customer. And if not, then they are done in the business. Because the efficiency is 92 to 98% in the lower Schumann frequency where Visiv Tower works at 18 kilohertz, no wire network is able to compete. But Visiv wants to do it from the beginning this way, that there is another tower that is then connected to the grid in a given country and is giving electricity to that country. So no pipelines, no oil, and no gas. Let me drop. The electrical energy becomes much cheaper at that point. But it is not only energy. One of the 2019 patents of Corum Brothers says about the ability to modulate the signal. By that, it becomes a tool for internet, telephony, communication, remote disabling of devices. So let's say you don't pay the credit card, it can become potentially a tool for the government to punish you, or for the company to punish you by disconnecting, let's say, your refrigerator, but not the stove or your microwave, based on a ID code. It also is able to, another partner of Corum Brothers says about location. That means that measuring the number of wavelengths from the two towers or three towers or network of towers, they're able not only to find out where the vehicle is, but where the human body is. Another implementation of that is border protection and space around the prisons. Every body of every person has a capacitance. So capacitive reactance change in the field, that is cross-section of towers in that field, creates a point that could be tracked. and to exceed.
So if this system was successful, the nations that have a lot of oil, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, rather than pumping the oil out of the ground, putting it in tankers and shipping them around the world, they would take the oil out of the ground, apply it to a power station, a power generating station, right in that country, who converts the oil into electricity. The electricity gets transmitted. So we'd be sending, by this Zanuck wave, we'd be sending electricity from the Mideast over to the United States, so to speak. Don't send tankers, send the electricity itself, and then Con Ed and Long Island Lighting Company would go and use it because they've got a Tesla tower set up somewhere in the area. And then I guess the Mideast countries would charge, in other words, Con Ed and Loco would send a certain amount of money over to Saudi Arabia and then send a certain amount of power to us. And is that the way the operation would take place? And if it is capable of doing that, are we talking about 5 years from now or 50 years from now? N2XJN, K2RIW.
In 2013, we had a discussion between me and you on this repeater, and I said that around 2019, 2020, the most people will go to moon. And you said, I hope I'm going to live that long. And now we have everything that is being done to be this way. I'm not the guy who has a special ability, but I was just employing the logical thinking. Let me drop. Based on the number of patents, is 2024. To the end of this year, they're going to have a first test. So you got to repeat, you got to recall what happened after Tesla, Marconi, the student of Tesla, have made first transatlantic communication. Cars, electrical cars don't need batteries any longer. They need only if there is no coverage at this area. If you have a coil and you have a capacitive coupling between the ground that has a Zanuck wave inside in the interface, you are theoretically able to run that car from the electricity of that grid. It's not a grid. So that is another receiver that could be switched off at any time by simply disconnecting because it has its own ID code. So we're talking about new technology and new world, but let me say this way. What is going to change if I'm wrong? Nothing. But if I'm good, if I'm right, then what's going to happen? Well, we're dealing with a situation in which we could become enslaved. Because every move of ours, everything that we do, is controlled. And to exceed.
If I understand you correctly, rather than worrying about my electric car having a battery that I charge every time I bring it home or wherever, I could have some kind of a structure on the car that picks up the power through the air directly, and therefore I can drive, as long as I pay the fee and I'm an accepted participant in the system, I could drive my electric car anywhere I want to and have a continuous source of energy. That's a possibility that I think you're explaining, and on paper, it sounds very desirable, if it'll work. But the Tesla tower that he set up in order to make the system coupled to this energy field was a very big structure. I don't know if you can build a compact version of that on an electric-powered vehicle. Over to you, Roy, K2RIW.
Let me put it this way. If I'm mistaken 50%, it's still too much. If I'm mistaking, 80% is still too much. The 20% of change in today's reality is a lot. A receiver is very forgiving, and that's your words that I've heard in 2010. And I do thank you, Dick, for that. You're a great teacher of ours. Let me jump. You actually made me plenty of hours enlightened. I'm not trying to compliment you. I don't care. This is the fact. It's simple mathematics. You did it to me, too. So, this is not the worst of what was going to happen. Let me fantasize a little bit more. There is a ionosphere and Earth, and the space between the ionosphere in, and Earth is being called Schumann waveguide. So imagine two spheres, one inside of the other, and then you have a fluctuation of energy inside the Schumann waveguide. One lightning is able to trigger an avalanche of lightning around the world, and you have a standing wave. Then all of the variation of that standing wave when they reach the Brewster angle could create or create the same Zenneck wave or surface wave inside that, that the interface, which is Earth and ionosphere. So now, remember that in 2011 I was in Georgia in Europe and I saw the device of Tariel Kapanadze, and till now nobody found that it's fake, but nobody was able to prove it. And as you said, receivers are very forgiving. They don't need to look like Tesla towers, and they could work very well. So if there is a Zenneck wave or surface wave inside the interface, then you need only a receiver, you don't need the transmitter, you need to tune to that particular frequency of the Zenneck wave, which is surface wave, and you need to have a proper polarization. So there are two factors that are important here. When you have a Tesla tower, only what is important in the transmitter is that top capacitor is supposed to be a big one, and the distance between Earth and top capacitor should be not less than 4 times diameter of the top capacitor. And elevation of the top capacitor gives you polarization. And that polarization is able to create the equiphase change to the equiphase sinking. And then, because we have an interface which is lossy dielectric, and which is the Earth, and then we have air. Actually, we should say lossy conductor, which is the Earth, and the air that is lossy dielectric, but only at certain conditions. We have a proper medium for the Zenneck wave to be there. So, now, if it's found that Zenneck wave could be used not only by transmitter and the receiver from A to B, but could be used because of its existence, natural existence in the interface, then we have end of the civilization, because some people are going to multiply too much and use too much resources that it would be an apocalypse. But this is my fantasy, and to share.
A receiver is very forgiving when you're trying to send it a signal for signaling. You're trying to send it information. But the amount of energy that receiver receives in this mistuned impedance, the amount of energy that gets there, is nanopico femtowatts. It's something extremely small. So even though a receiver is forgiving, I don't think that means I can send energy to that receiver station very well. Are there experiments being planned right now to use this Zenneck wave technique for sending energy? Are there experiments in progress And how soon will we be hearing about this, West into XJN, K2RIW?
I have my own study that I do with it and my own experiments that I do with it. And one of the friends of mine, Dr. Hans from Germany, came out with a successful result. And the thing is that even if you write, the one thing you not take into consideration, even if electrical energy sent to the Zenek wave fails, the receiver is very forgiving, and yes, the amount of power is small, yes, when you're receiving the air wave, but when you're receiving the wave that is not radiating, only radiating in the near field, and that's one of the key things about the Zenek wave, or any surface wave at any frequency, it doesn't radiate. So the electrical field is simply vanishing in the vertical pattern. So the equiphase is one of the primary reasons why you have a Zenek wave. Let me drop it. And that is explained by Brewster angle. And the Brewster angle is also known as a polarization angle. It's an angle of incidence at which, if we can compare to light, the light with the particle polarization is perfectly transmitted through the transparent dielectric surface with no reflection. What was found by those two universities, and it was found by many other scientists at different frequencies, they go to gigahertz and terahertz with that as well, with the surface waves, let me drop. Yet there is no reflection. So there is no SWR. When you properly tune the Tesla tower or Tesla coil to the self-resonance frequency, and you delete, there are two major resonance frequencies. One is for the primary coil, and one is for the secondary coil, the top one. So there are two different resonances in it. There is a series of partial resonances in during the length of the Tesla coil, but we're not talking about it. We're not going to the very much difficult stuff. When unpolarized signal or the energy in form of Zenek wave, I mean, of wave, is incident at this angle, which is the Brewster angle, the light that is reflected from the surface is perfectly polarized. And that's what makes Zenek wave or any surface wave made. And there is a number of scientific articles. That's out of any doubt that this works. It, you may question only if it's possible to use the air for it. And to actually it.
What's your impression of all of this, Roy? And AC2GS, do you believe this technique can become a viable method of transmitting energy between continents? AC2GS, K2RIW.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. In a word, no, I don't kind of believe most of this stuff. It kind of goes against everything I ever learned about how physics works. Even the article that Wesley cites, which is a university, a small study of a few people, they have a very telling line in their unpeer-reviewed article that's just sitting around waiting, I guess, to be peer-reviewed or something. It hasn't been published, except it's been loaded up on a website. And the interesting line is, quote, "While efficient transmission of non-radiative wireless power over long distances using Earth as a conductor is far from practical realization, it may be possible to utilize already existing metal structures to send guided mode waves for powering of electrical devices." These guys really weren't that into Wesley's concept of a worldwide grid. They're operating on 4 meters, which is roughly 12 feet. They're operating in the near field, not the far field. And they're operating with a piece of metal, not the the vagaries of Earth ground to deal with.
Okay. And first of all, I do agree with Dr. Roy. It's not only one university and a few guys. It's two universities from two different continents. And they made independent study on it, and they have made a joint report. So that was an action that was coordinated to make sure that all of the data bases are equal. They demonstrated excitation of waves of metal structure that can be used for delivering electrical energy to multiple devices, and they proved it. Yes, it is done in near field, but we talk about Dr. Quorum, who is 70-something years old right now, and he's working on it. The first patent he made was 1988. The excitation of the Schumann waveguides in order to extract electrical energy from the Schumann waveguide. But then he came across Zenneck waves. Let me jump. The wave shows that slow transverse attenuation property similar to Zenneck wave along the metal-air interface and can be used for efficient powering of devices. And they use 8-meter structure. They also show that Zenneck wave can be used for transmitting power across partial metals enclosures. So only by the fact that they have only one conducting surface and the other one is air, which is a perfect interface, they somehow related to Gobo. A study that I have that I was trying to cover 3 years ago. Let me jump. Mr. Gobo in 1908 found out that if you use a single wire that is covered with insulator, that is like a coaxial cable without the outer shield on it, you're creating an environment that is an interface that is able to carry on a wave inside. Later on, coaxial cable was discovered. Power transmission to multiple receiving resonators with uniform efficiency has also been established experimentally, shows excellent agreement with the simulation. So they have made number of simulations. The simulation result is compared with coupled mode power transfer system. In the supplementary figure S5, you have that paper in front of you. Existing coupled mode undergo peak splitting when multiple receiving units are involved. And they say that it must be ground coupled. It must be connected to the ground. Our study shows that using wave-based transmission, we solve that by using wave-based transmission, we solve that issue. And the end of it is the efficiency of the power transmissions increases when multiple receiving units are present instead of decrease because you have more load as the power uniformly spread across the metal surface. Now compare it to the earth. This kind of increase due to the multiple receiving units was also observed in the widely followed article where weakly coupled system was used. The maximum value of E and H field emitted from the system was 34% and 89%. Now we take the upper part of it, 89%, and we say that they just started to work on it. The report from Dr. Quorum, who has unquestionable reputation and education. He was working with DARPA, with NASA, and plenty of other institutions. Is 92% at lowest, but he is 92 to 98. Can you imagine 2% of losses at Schumann resonance frequency? The lower frequency, the lower the losses from one side of the earth to the other, and salty water. It's perfect for it. Enter Aegean.
This wave that you pick up sounds like it's got to be on a resonant frequency. Do you really believe, and I think you're saying for it to work, you have to have contact to the ground. While driving around in an electric automobile, establishing that ground potential, connection to the ground, sounds very difficult. Over you on that one, Wes, N2XJN, K2IW.
One of the readings that I have seen from Dr. Kolb is capacitive coupling. What it is actually one coil and two top capacitors on the sides of it. And there is another coil that has lower amount of wind and is connected to the load. And the load is the electrical motor of electric car. So that's how the coupling looks like. The way that I have described this, those two universities, the physical experiment that I have made, was that they operated with the near field. So, my understanding is that at least one good thing that Dr. Roy is doing is he's criticizing me, and I love it. I do very much love it. He actually is keeping up my sanity. And you, Dick, actually are very much helpful as well, because you pushed me to find the article and the experimental arrangement in order to fulfill your request. That means if you don't have it, it's in the area of we don't discuss in here. So I do thank you very much for taking the time for that. Thank you.
Okay, good luck with that one, Roy. Sounds like a dark horse to me. Wes. To me and Roy, it sounds like a dark horse. Maybe sometime in the future we'll hear about more successful experiments saying that it is a viable technique. Joe is the next person who was about to run a series of experiments. Let's see how that works. W2RYY, K2RYW. You got it, Joe.
The question this week has to do with power transformers. I'd like to know how they construct it. I can take one apart and try to repair it.
You said power transformer. By that, do you mean a pole pig transformer? You want to know how they're constructed? Because you want to make use of one? Is that what you're saying, Joe? Go ahead.
No. Power transformers used inside a charger to charge batteries for a portable radio. That kind of power transformer. Simply has a primary and a secondary.
Okay. So, in the kind of an inverter is what I think you're talking about, where you've got a transformer, and you're sending energy from primary to secondary, and quite often they're used in a saturated mode. Are you studying inverter-like circuits to make a power supply system? What are you trying to do, Joe? The B2RYY, K2RYW?
I'm trying to repair a transformer I can no longer purchase because it's no longer made. That's what I'm trying to do.
Okay, you're trying to repair a transformer. That suggests that you, by some means, came to the conclusion that the transformer that's in your circuit is defective. By what kind of a test did you discover that you think is defective? What was the evidence that it's defective, Joe? Go ahead.
Originally, the primary coil part of it was shorted because I took the secondary leads off the circuit board, and it still drew a lot of current, blew a fuse. Something else happened to it, and now it's the primary is simply open, completely open. Doesn't read any continuity across the primary whatsoever. And that's the transformer completely removed from the apparatus that it's installed in.
Okay, I think you're saying you had evidence that maybe the primary used to have a shorted turn, That's a guess as to why it was inoperative. By some means, I guess you tried to burn out the short circuit, and now you've got a primary that's an open circuit. And in many transformers, the primary is the first thing on top of the core, and the secondary with zillions of turns is on top of that. So for you to get to that primary and rewind it, I guess would be pretty heroic, almost out of the question. Is that what you're saying, Joe? WGYY, KQIW?
Yes. The lamination appears to be attached completely. Almost looks like it appear, if you look at it, it looks like the one part of lamination looks like an E, like a capital E, and the windings are around the center post of that, and then on the bottom you have more lamination, but it does look like they're glued. It looks like it's almost like spot welded to be able to keep the thing totally encased or in continuity with all the laminations. So that's what I don't know if I should try to take that apart or whatever. Is that how most transformers are generally put together? Do they weld the stuff? Do they glue the stuff? How are the things put together? I mean, once I can get the bottom lamination, which is simply flat metal plates, off, I could try to slide the coil off and then take it apart to examine it further. I don't know if I have a shorted winding, how much the winding shorted, but initially blew the primary fuse. That's what I'm dealing with right now. And the transformer, I can't buy the transformer because the device is like 30 years old. So, no longer available.
Sure would be nice if somebody had one on eBay and you could buy it, even though it's an old device. The whole machine itself must exist on somebody's shelf somewhere. It would be nice if you could talk him out of selling it to you. The individual laminations of a transformer must be insulated from each other so you don't develop eddy currents. So are they welded together? I think not. That would be an electrical contact between the individual layers and be violating the whole reason for having individual layers, to avoid the eddy currents. So if they're bound by some means, it's by an insulating glue of some kind, is my guess. You've got a difficult assignment there, as I see it, Joe, to try to fix this thing. The overall circuit that this transformer went into, was it a kind of a power supply? Was it an inverter? What was it? Oh, you Joe, K2RIW. And how many watts was it running at when it was in good shape?
Well, the secondary output voltage is 22 volts. Don't know the current rating, but the charger itself puts out 22 volts DC at a rating of 1100 mils. This is a charged battery for portable radio. The electronic circuit board probably is okay. How this thing developed a short on the primary, I don't know. It's always been plugged into a surge arrestor, like the other chargers I have, which is similar to it. So I thought I could simply try to take it apart and, rebuild it, so to speak. And I can see windings from the secondary. They are the last layer. And they look thicker than the other layer, most likely, because it's much lower voltage and higher current output. But this lamination is, you think it's just simply glued. Now, I'm not talking about the insulation between the plates themselves. It's like one set of plates, looks like about 25 plates are put together. And you can picture what I'm talking about, like a capital E, and the coil of wire is on the center post. And then to enclose the bottom or continue the bottom across to enclose that coil or keep it contained, there's just a flat plate that looks similar in construction to the other part of the flat plates, except it's just simply flat. There's not nothing else there. But that looks, it almost looks like it's welded. But you said all these things have to be actually insulated one from another. So maybe it's a glue I'm dealing with, possibly. But I just want to bring the question up here just to see if you knew, or somebody else maybe out there knew, if they actually glue these things, like one part of this of the lamination to another part of laminations. And I can't see between the lamination to actually look at the insulation there. I can't do that until I take the thing apart or attempt to take it apart.
Okay, I heard Rich, and who is the other person signing in right now?
AZ2GS.
Okay, I'll take Rich and Roy in that order. N2EO first. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick, I think you're going to say what I'm going to say. Those are called EI laminations. One is shaped like a letter E, and then the other one is straight, like the letter I. They're simply, each plate just simply has lacquer on it. You have to break that seal. Just hit it with something. The lacquer is there, like you say, Dick, to keep them insulated so there's no chance of building up eddy currents. There are people that rewind transformers. If you remember when I added that second tube to the Ameritron AL1500 amplifier, I needed a brand new transformer that could handle double the current. I got one that was about the same size, a little bit bigger, it was hard to get it in, and I had it done by a company, I don't remember the name, it was in New England somewhere. And there are people, I think Joe looks on the internet, and looks up on Google, transformer rewinding. He'll find somebody. Because if he ruins it, trying to rewind it himself, I'm not saying he will, but then he's going to really be in trouble. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, those EI laminations, the E where the coil is around the center post, and the I completes the magnetic circuit. And I think I've seen these in transformers where alternate layers have the E mounted upside down. So the first layer, the E is right side up, the next layer is upside down, and so on. So that you have good magnetic coupling across that gap between the E and the I as being completed in the adjacent layers. But each of those layers are all insulated from each other by lacquer, as you were saying, Rich. And taking that apart is not easy. Replacing it is not easy. Repairing it is not easy. Finding somebody who's got one and buying it would be a lot nicer if you could find that person. Here, Roy's got to say about all of the above. AC2GS, have you ever taken one of these apart? Somehow I doubt it. You got it, Roy. KTRIW.
When I was much younger, I took everything apart. So, yeah, I took transformers apart as well. But I'm a little confused by Joe's question. It sounds like it's a kind of a standard 120-volt primary, 22-volt secondary. I didn't catch exactly how many amps, but it sounds like it's only something like 2 or 3 amps. There must be 100 different versions of that being sold for a relatively little amount of money. It doesn't sound like a particularly odd type of a transformer. Have you looked at Mauser's and Jameco and these other places and made sure that they just don't sell exactly the transformer? It might be off-size, but you might be able to find one that fits in the enclosure.
Let me ask you a quick question on this one, Roy. A transformer that's sometimes contained inside of a pole pig power supply system, are they sometimes built this way, do you think? Are the things you've taken apart, a wall wart is what I should have been saying. Does a wall wart have a transformer like this? EC2GS, K2IW?
I mean, one of the problems is when I was doing this was back in the 60s before there were such things as wool warts. I think they have a transformer, but they also have a lot of other switching electronics to do the deed. That's why they're so light and so relatively cheap. But it sounds to me that Joe is just dealing with an old-time battery eliminator power supply. So, you know, like I said, there shouldn't be anything particularly special. As long as you get the secondary voltage correct and the current, and it fits in the enclosure, you should be able to find something like that, unless I'm missing something.
Okay, I don't think you're telling him to build one of his own. You think he can find it in some other piece of electronics that he can buy? Is that what you're suggesting, Roy? Go ahead.
I think he could find a replacement part. He doesn't have to buy an entire unit and then salvage his transformer. I think in Mauser's or Jameco or whatever, if he looks up 115-volt primary, 22-volt secondary, 4-amp capacity and checks that the size will fit his enclosure, that he can replace it, unless I'm missing something.
So you believe there is already in existence a substitute, maybe not the same serial number, maybe not the same brand name, but an electronic equivalent is what you believe they should look for. Maybe he's already done that. Let's find out. To B2RYY, K2RYW. Go ahead, Joe.
W-H-R-O-Y-Y. Well, the transformer has two numbers on it. One is a Motorola part number, and the other number below that is an ET. It's an ETP number. That's the number I put in Google, because I called Motorola, and they said we don't have the part list in our parts system anymore, so it's obsolete. Can't find the part number, so that's bad news. That means I can't supply you the part. But I tried the ETP number on Google, and it comes up with no hits at all. Usually, you can find a manufactured part number, and you'll find a lot of different things related to it, people talking about it or whatever. In this case, I put that number, and it comes up with absolutely nothing.
That is a little discouraging. The physical dimensions of the transformer you're talking about, how many inches wide, deep, and high, Joe? Over to you, Joe.
I didn't measure it, so I can't really tell you that. I can't measure. I can't tell you exact figures, which is what you're looking for.
I'm not looking for exact figures. Is the approximate width, length, and height 1 inch, 3 inch, 10 inches? Give me a rough ballpark. It doesn't have to be exact.
Didn't measure it. I don't know. It's not like, you know, it's not a very big transformer. Maybe, let's see, not more than 2 inches high, 2.5 inches long, and the width is maybe, counting the coil itself, maybe less than 2 inches. That's just what I can approximately remember from the thing. See, I have several of these chargers. Now, the other chargers took apart to measure the winding, secondary winding on, to know the voltage of a good working one. That one's got a different Motorola part number, so they may have replaced it at some point in time. And it's also got a different ETP number on it, too. But I was able to measure the inductance of that transformer with the winding, the secondary winding, not shorted and shorted, to see how much changed. So I have, you know, inductance readings of a good working transformer, looking at through the line cord. And like I said, originally the problem was it was shorted because it blew the primary, you know, the primary fuse, 110 volt fuse. So I thought I could just simply bring up the subject on hand. Somebody says, "Oh yeah, that's how these things come apart." You think these things, the laminations, are flipped around where the E and the I, so to speak, are flipped? It doesn't look like that. You can almost look like on the side edge of the thing and see a seam. So it's kind of funny if they that'd be a little bit of a manufacturing nightmare to be able to put these things together like that, don't you think?
Okay, it's in the vicinity of 2x2x2, roughly 8 cubic inches. Sure do think there's got to be a similar transformer. I have the impression from everything I'm hearing it's running as layers. That way you end up with a lot less reluctance of that pass. In other words, a magnetic resistance, if you know what I mean. Roy and I are of the opinion that an equivalent transformer must exist in some other piece of electronics, not necessarily Motorola. Let's see if anyone else has any comments on all of the above. Give me your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Dick and Tawil, real quick. They are reversed. The E and the I one way, next one is the other way. They alternate. You're correct.
WS1.
Go ahead, WS2N. Paul.
Yeah, I put it into the computer, 120 volts for primary and 22 for secondary. And, you know, right away you get this one transformer, but there are 120 on primary and 24 volts for, you know, secondary. So that's close enough. Or you could actually put in, no, you could use the primary and put in 208 or 240 volts and wind up with 40 volts out on the secondary. So it must be a heavy-duty transformer to be able to handle 220 as well. But for $9, what, $9.25?